And you're tuned to the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host, I'm Colonel Mason, also on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Well, at this time we have with us Adam Cohn. He's Clinical Associate Professor and Director of Laboratory for Additive Manufacturing, Robotics, and Automation at Southern Methodist University. You're a mechanical engineer, really, aren't you, Professor Cohn?
Well, my training is actually in physics, but I've done a great deal of mechanical engineering in my career and ended up on the faculty at SMU in mechanical engineering.
Well, we're so glad to have you with us. I understand you're going to be making a presentation at MetroCon on the 22nd of October at the Arlington Convention Center. MetroCon has been going on, this is the 28th straight year for MetroCon. And, of course, it's a collaboration of IEEE and Lockheed Martin and a number of other engineering firms. So give us sort of an overview of what we can expect to hear from you when we attend MetroCon.
Well, I'm going to be focusing my talk on 3D printing. And 3D printing, as you know, has become a very popular topic in recent years. A number of years ago, in fact, very few people knew about it, but probably in the last 3 or 4 years, just about everyone has heard of 3D printing. So I'll be providing an overview of the technologies involved, because there isn't just one technology in 3D printing, there are quite a few, and some of the applications that are in use at present and also emerging, and I'll also cover some of the emerging technologies for that matter. And then I will probably turn to a discussion of some of the research we're doing at SMU in my lab to develop some more advanced 3D printing technologies. I think that should more or less fill the time I have at MetroCon.
Okay, good. Now, let's delve in a little bit further to 3D printing. I mean, we see reports every once in a while. Somebody even made a gun that actually fired using 3D printing. It's really just another way of manufacturing, doing it in layers. But you don't have a large choice of materials, do you, that you can call upon for 3D printing?
Well, you're right to some extent. I mean, compared to conventional manufacturing, the choices are limited. However, the choices are growing all the time, and we already have quite a few plastics, quite a few metals that are available. It's also worth recognizing that even though you might be able to print something in a particular material that you may have heard of, like nylon or stainless steel, you don't necessarily get the same properties that you would if you manufactured a part by a conventional method. So you're right. It's limited in materials, though improving all the time. But there's still usually enough choice that people can make some useful things.
Well, I didn't dream that you could do any 3D printing with stainless steel. Did you? Was that just kind of thrown in there for our edification, or are there advances that seem as though we will be able to do 3D printing with stainless steel?
Well, no, people are already doing stainless steels and titaniums and tool steels and a number of other metals in the last few years, particularly that was an area of 3D printing that really emerged probably 10 to 15 years ago and is currently the subject of a great deal of research, but I don't want to suggest that it's only in academic institutions. There are a number of companies that sell metal 3D printing machines, typically using a high-powered laser to melt a metal powder. And it's being taken very seriously. For example, General Electric is developing the capability of printing production quantities of a fuel nozzle for their upcoming next-generation engine called the LEAP engine. And they hope in a year or two to actually start building tens of thousands of these nozzles, several of which are used per engine, entirely using 3D printing from a material such as stainless steel. I don't know exactly what they're planning to use, but they have a lot of work to do in order to qualify this material, make it establish the airworthiness of it, if you will, because certainly we don't want a nozzle in an engine to suddenly fail and cause the engine to fail. But people are taking this very seriously, and that's not even to mention the use in medical devices and dental devices of 3D printed metal parts. For example, dental copings and bridges and crowns and things like that that people have been making for a while now and are making in considerable numbers. So metal 3D printing is real. It's out there. It's very difficult to pull it off successfully. It takes a lot of practice and iteration, but it's absolutely a new thing and an important thing.
Well, I can understand with nylon or plastics, you melt it, and of course you're not talking about now using lasers to melt the metal. So I would, and the metal powder. So that would mean to say then that the aluminum or the stainless steel or whatever hard substance it was has to be reduced to a powder first, and then when it's printed, it's hit with this laser that melts it into some sort of its mold or layer or something in that manner or fashion, and. But this seems like a very laborious process. If you've got to turn it into a powder before you can manufacture it, why not just mold it in the beginning or extrude it or any number of other ways that we've made things up to now?
Well, because all the other conventional methods you describe require a tool of some sort that has the shape of the part you're trying to produce. 3D printing, on the other hand, is a toolless process direct from CAD design and allows you to make structures essentially directly without any tooling whatsoever. It also allows you to make geometries that are otherwise unmanufacturable, such as very complex internal features that you could never mold or machine, such as cellular type structures that have a lot of holes in them, essentially, to reduce their weight, for example, for an aerospace application. Things that have undercuts as much as you want. And the geometrical freedom that 3D printing offers is one of the main reasons that people are so excited about it. But yes, you're right. The material needs to be powdered in the case of metal 3D printing. In most processes, there's one or two where that isn't the case. That's also true of some of the plastic 3D printing processes, like selective laser sintering, which is used most commonly with nylons, also involves a powdered material. Typically, the particles of these processes are quite small, on the order of 50 microns.
So there's
some cost.
Yeah, well, there's a whole industry then right now of has cropped up in turning materials into powder. Is that it?
Indeed, and you can imagine that the materials are therefore more expensive in that form than they would be in bulk form. And that's part of the issue. I mean, 3D printing has a number of benefits, but it also has some liabilities, and we spoke about material properties limitations. But also the cost can be significant because of the materials cost, because the processes themselves are rather slow, and the machines are rather expensive. So, you know, the amortized cost of making a part is actually pretty high. But nonetheless, there are some geometries that make a lot of sense to produce with 3D printing, and the nozzle that I mentioned is certainly one of them. In fact, they were able to, by 3D printing the nozzle, reduce the parts count from about 18 or 20 to 1, and achieve a more efficient design in terms of fuel efficiency, and something that's probably going to be more robust and longer lasting, because it isn't built by combining separate pieces which might actually start to break apart after a while.
Well, this is a whole lot more fascinating than the news stories I've seen where somebody makes a plastic gun. I mean, really, if you're talking about a whole industries that are getting involved with taking materials and reducing them to powder so they can do 3D printing, and of course you mentioned the expense, but then again, you're saving some expense because going directly from CAD, computer-aided design, directly order it through a printer, and all you have to do is make sure that the bins of the printer are being fed with the material, and that the the lasers work, I can see where actually you're cutting costs in one area while you're adding costs to another.
Well, that's true. Certainly the labor cost is typically lower, and you're saving on tooling, as I mentioned. So if you're planning to do small quantities of parts, typically 3D printing may be an attractive approach, whereas with high volume, it often isn't a practical approach, because at that point, you'd probably be better off investing in the tooling, and then you can knock out the parts pretty cheaply. But there's no hard and fast rules, because geometry plays an important role. And I mentioned that there are parts that you simply can't make without 3D printing, or would be difficult to make, and that needs to be factored into any analysis of what is a good candidate for 3D printing and what is not.
Now, would you say that the United States is a leader in this regard, or is this some sort of a worldwide revolution that's going on all over everywhere?
Well, at this point, it's worldwide. The United States was the pioneer of this whole set of technologies. The first commercial technology was called stereolithography, and it was invented at a California company at the time called 3D Systems, which is actually now one of the industry leaders. Mm-hmm. And other developments of technologies occurred mostly in the U.S. Unfortunately, quite a few of the equipment providers have wound up being outside the U.S. However, for example, most of these metal printing machines are actually coming out of Europe right now. There are other efforts around the world. I mean, historically, the Japanese were fairly heavily involved. They're not so much now, but China is coming up very quickly. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of machines coming out of China, and quite a bit of research being done in Chinese institutions. But you'll find activities in 3D printing probably in every industrialized country right now.
Wow, that's fascinating. Of course, China, we expect them to. They seem to be coming up on everything very, very rapidly. And of course, some are saying that's because they have an easy time hacking into our secrets in industry and going and copying them than for their own uses. But tell me, after you get through explaining some of this at Metricon about the 3D printing, you're going to talk about some of the things that are going on at Southern Methodist University too. So can you kind of fill us in a little bit?
Sure. I'd like to talk mostly about the main project that we've been involved with for a couple of years now, and it's funded by the National Science Foundation and under the umbrella of the National Robotics Initiative, which is an initiative involving several agencies, including NSF and the Department of Agriculture and NIH. And it is basically an attempt to promote the development of advanced robotic systems, particularly what are called co-robots. These are robots that can work in closer proximity to human beings without being dangerous, for example. So, a robot standing next to you on the assembly line, for example. Mm-hmm. And a subset of co-robots is soft robotics, which is a relatively new but increasingly active area in which people are trying to make robots not from hard, rigid materials that move quickly and with a lot of power behind them, but rather soft materials such as rubbers and other flexible materials, and using other types of actuation, typically like pneumatics or hydraulics. And the idea here is to certainly make robots that are safer to be around, but also make robots that maybe can do things that conventional robots cannot, such as, let's say you want a robot to pick a fruit off a tree. You might not be able to do that without destroying the fruit with a conventional robot, but with a soft robotic gripper, you could kind of surround the fruit and not damage it, much like you would if you were using a human hand to pick it. You can also imagine that a soft robot might be able to change its shape or squeeze through a crevice. And so there are new modes of locomotion possible and shape transformation. And you could imagine an application, for example, in search and rescue, where you do want to deploy a robot that will be able to slip through the cracks and try to reach someone who's trapped inside rubble. So anyway, we're we're funded by that initiative, and we are focusing on soft robots. An example of a soft robot might be an octopus tentacle, or a robot that has an octopus tentacle, and you can picture that, of course, and realize that it's a very flexible shape that can adapt various configurations. And you also realize when you think about that, that there probably need to be a lot of actuators in order to control that. There are a lot of degrees of freedom. If you don't control anything, it's just a floppy tentacle, but if you control it, you can have it change its shape and do useful things. So once you realize you need to make a lot of actuators, and probably also a number of sensors to know what those actuators are doing, and also perhaps a sensing skin so that the robot knows where it's being touched and how it's being touched, well, you realize that you have a tremendous problem in manufacturing, and that is, how do I get all those actuators in there? How do I get the sensors in there? How do I get them all wired up together so I can control them and sense from them? And you realize it's going to be an expensive thing. It's going to be heavy. It's going to be bulky. There's no good solution. So our approach is actually to try to monolithically print, that's to say, print it in one single process, all the actuators, all the sensors, and all the interconnects between those things. And so we're developing a process that we call fiber encapsulation additive manufacturing, which allows us to print multiple materials and achieve multifunctional active structures such as soft robotics.
Wow. Boy, you just really... That was quite a little journey you took us on here. Let me see if I could kind of back up with this just a little bit. Soft robots, and that can feel and can squeeze through smaller areas. It sounds like we're creating a subspecies of human almost. And then these robots, of course, you're not talking about them thinking on their own. You're talking about are controlling these robots. I don't know if plans are eventually to have them think on their own or not. I would suppose so. Certainly to be making some decisions when we can't be there to tell them what decisions to be made, like in, say, search and rescue in some tight situations and some difficult things. Also, the robots may be able to operate without air or water or something. And then on top of that, you're saying that we're going to create these robots by printing them through a printing machine that will make all their various different parts all together and assemble this robot. It just sounds just phenomenal. It's very, very hard to grasp. Is that what we're going to be seeing?
Well, I think so. You know, we don't have expertise in the artificial intelligence aspects of robotics, and it's not something we're pursuing, therefore, but we are pursuing the manufacturing and the mechanics of robots, and trying to come up with, as I said, a method of printing complex electromechanical systems monolithically. So you would basically load up this 3D printer with the required materials, send it the appropriate CAD data describing the geometry, which includes multiple material designation of different components, and then let the printer go, and you would come back to something that you could take out of the machine, connect it to a source of power, and perhaps external microcontrollers and maybe other electronics, but then it would essentially move. So they could, you know, almost walk out of the printer itself, if you will.
Wow. That's just mind-boggling, and I could see that if the time comes that there is artificial intelligence and they're able to think on their own, you've got a robot who's pliable, flexible, soft, can move in various places, have feeling, and also can do some thinking. I could see there might be a whole a union for these robots and they're almost treated like a subspecies of humans. It's just really hard to fathom. Can you tell me, Professor Cohen, what role is nanotechnology playing in manufacturing and these manufacturing printers and sorts of things and play into these robots?
None that is particularly relevant at this time, at least with our process. There are materials that people are working on, which sometimes have a nano particulate particles basically inside them to improve strength or stiffness or something like that. And that might work into what we're doing, but we are working on more of a macro scale and possibly going a little bit into the micro, but not really the nano in terms of the structures that we're producing. So these are we're talking about building things that are, you know, fist size to the limb size. And think of, as you said, building something human-like. As a matter of fact, we think that some of the applications for this technology include prosthetics. Like you can imagine, if someone has lost a hand, that you might print a replacement hand for them, which has actuators and a sensing skin built in, and make it from a soft material. And then be able to interface it, and that's, of course, the tough part, to either the nervous system or to maybe existing muscle remnants that are there, and somehow have it move in a more natural and articulate way than a traditional prosthetic hand would move. So it'd be, and of course it would be customized, this is one of the great virtues of 3D printing, to look exactly like the person's other hand, assuming they still have that one, and a mirror image of that. So I really do think there are a lot of important prosthetic applications for this work once it's further developed. So I do want to say, though, that we're not at a, you know, we're not at an advanced stage of development. We're at a pretty early stage of development.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. We're talking about the era of a bionic human being, like we saw on television 40 years ago, and now all of a sudden it looks like it's in the future. But you're saying it's not really as close as it may sound in what we're talking about right now, and that would lead me to the next question. Look down the road 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. What do you see in the future? What's the prospect out there?
Are you talking about in general for 3D printing or for what we're up to? What did you have in mind?
Hey, I'll tell you what. Wherever you want to take us with this, it's fine with me. 5, 10, 15 years down the road, if you have a broad view of a whole lot of things, go ahead. Throw it at us.
Well, I think in general we're going to see a lot more use of 3D printing as materials become more available and the materials' properties become better, and as the cost of machines comes down. So I think that 3D printing will play a very significant role in manufacturing downstream. I don't necessarily think what a lot of people have been thinking, that there's going to be a 3D printer in everyone's home in the near future, in part because there really hasn't been a killer app found for that yet. And there are many alternatives to having one in your home, such as going to a service and just getting something that you need. And I think that most people are going to be satisfied with that. There are so many aspects to 3D printing, so many potential applications. I mean, people are looking at building entire structures, habitable structures, buildings, using 3D printing. I think that that will eventually become an interesting way of making at least some architectural structures. People are looking very seriously at printing food, and if they were ever extremely successful with that, which they're not yet, you could imagine that being a justification for having a 3D printer in your home. There are even people looking at potentially printing textile type structures, so you know, you could maybe one day imagine printing clothing that you download from the internet. So there's a lot of potential applications, some of them rather far out right now, and some of them probably won't go anywhere, but the field is very, very active. I just came back from the big academic conference on 3D printing, and there was something like 300 papers being presented over 3 days. There are many active companies, both large and small, a lot of startups actually in the last few years. A lot of innovation is going on, and I think we're going to see in the next few years some pretty stunning things come out. I think the only other thing I wanted to mention, that as part of this effort to produce soft robots, we've not only had to figure out how to do electrically conductive materials and non-conductive materials in the same process, which has been traditionally a big challenge, but we've also needed to develop some soft materials. And we have now the ability to print materials that are extremely soft, I mean, much softer than a rubber band, And traditionally, 3D printing has been restricted to pretty rigid materials like, material like ABS or nylon, which really isn't that flexible. So we actually have two efforts relating to soft materials at this time, one of which is just starting, and I think that there are going to be a lot of applications that come out of such things as well. I mean, again, perhaps prosthetics, but also molds and seals and valves and all sorts of things that you can imagine. If you look around and you see quite a few rubber items in the manufactured world, and most of those right now cannot be 3D printed with good materials, and we're trying to change that. I think that certainly in terms of standards, one should always have the most integrity possible in all one's endeavors. But I also, in terms of an approach to maybe innovation, I would say that you should always start asking, how should something actually be? And then go and find a way to make it that way, as opposed to starting with what you know to be existing capability and then trying to incrementally improve it. So, ask yourself, if you're developing a product for someone to use, how should it work ideally? What should the experience of that user be? And then ask what technological capabilities out there could be put to use, maybe in combination, to get you there. So that's sort of an approach, if you will, to moving forward technologically.
All right, Professor Adam Cohn, at the Department of Mechanical Engineering at Southern Methodist University. He's a clinical associate professor, director of the Laboratory for Additive Manufacturing, Robotics, and Automation. You've been just a fascinating guest and really given us some very deep things to think about. Thank you so very much for being with us. We'll look forward to seeing you at the Arlington Convention Center the 22nd of October for MetroCon.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to talk, and I've enjoyed it tremendously.
And you're tuned to the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host, I'm Colonel Mason, also on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz.